Hello, hello! This is the Big Show once again with me as a replacement host. Ewan simply had a customer call today, so he couldn't make it, but he asked me to step in again, so he'll have to deal with me. Today I have I think it's an all-star lineup. Two people didn't show up, but we still have a pretty cool lineup, starting with Hawa. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine.
How's life? Still at home, still under quarantine?
I'm still at home, still under quarantine. Haven't been good at going out for my daily exercise this week, so been stuck at home a lot. But it's been a good week, so yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's the most important thing. The workout thing will work out too. Next to him, we have Jeff Gemmett. How are you doing? Long time no see.
I'm doing well. It's great to see you again today. And since you said this is like an all-star lineup, the people that didn't show up are clearly not stars, right?
No, totally not. Show up. Not. It's very simple. Step one, show up.
Yeah. So, no new animals in town since we spoke last.
Wow. So no, elephants or anything like that now? Alligators?
Not yet. But the day is young.
The day is young. Maybe some squirrels.
Oh, yeah. The squirrels and the raccoons are always here.
Okay. So somehow, I don't know, Colorado sounds like a zoo.
Sometimes it is.
Sometimes it is. Not just because of the people, right?
Yes, right. Not just because of the people.
Okay. And last, but by no means least, we have Alistair.
Hello.
Not in Nice.
No. My niece isn't here.
Oh, niece is here. Okay.
You're going to ask me how I am. I'm fine. Yes. You know, you should start these and just say, hi, I'm Ewan, and just see how long it goes before someone in the chat room goes, hang on, this can't be right.
Hang on. You look too good to be Ewan.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like Ewan has...
Well, things are all fine here. The weather's taken a turn for the better. So it's just...
Nice.
We've had weeks of rain and now the heat's calm and the sun and... without trying to labour the point, down here we're allowed to actually leave the front door again, so
nice.
We don't need an ausweis, so we can just go out and do what we like. And of course, what would anyone do after 2 months of being locked in? What's the first place he's going to go? Yep, I went to the garden centre today.
I thought you would say you went to a vineyard or something, since it's France.
Yeah, no, I just
went to IKEA.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Well, this was IKEA has actually just opened this week. I'll put that on hold, but because I've just moved into a house, and I thought, yeah, it's plenty of time to actually get furniture. And then the lock-in started. So with the good weather turning up, and I've got a little back garden, of course, all I can do is stand in the back garden, which does feel very strange, and the neighbours think it looks odd, just me standing in the back garden. No garden furniture, but now we have garden furniture. And today I bought a parasol. So now the sun's come out, we're hiding under the parasol. a lovely, lovely day under the parasol.
Yeah, I mean, after 2 months of staying inside, you probably need it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I told you, I think once before, I've got this tiny... kind of a balcony thing in front of the spare bedroom at the front of the house, and it gets the sun in the evening. And again, normally what people do is they sit there and read a book or two little chairs and have a cup of tea in the evening. And of course, I've got nothing, just this balcony. So I got into this habit of after work, I thought, well, I'll get some sun. I'll go on the balcony and read. And all I can do is just stand. I can't sit because I don't get any sun. So I stand on this balcony and I look like, Il Duce, making a walking past go, what's that man doing standing? And of course, I kind of go, I'm reading a book. Yeah, but why are you doing it like that? Got nothing to sit on. So I also bought a little chair today so I can sit on that balcony at the front.
Cool.
Ta-da. Yeah. Garden center's fantastic.
Yeah. Was the garden center super busy or
Well, the queue to get to the cash till was busy, but the center itself wasn't, no.
Okay. Yeah, we had that here. Like, the day the garden center opened, there were, like, 2-hour long lines.
Wow.
Well, they've got to be extra careful with everything, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, but on top of that, basically everybody was going. Like, day one. Okay. Yeah. We had the same thing here on Friday. They opened up the restaurants again. And same thing, really? Like, they were super busy,
nice.
no distancing or anything. Like, they were supposed to be rules and whatever, but just based on what I've seen here, like, nobody follows them.
I don't understand. How would that work if there was no distancing? I don't think I'd be happy about having food if there's someone coughing and sneezing next to me.
Apparently, surprised, those people didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like,
I get bothered about that anyway when I go to a restaurant.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too. So it was a bit shocking to see that. I was like, okay, I'm not even thinking about going out, and like they were packed. They actually, like in Austria, they closed down a couple. Like, the police closed down quite a few restaurants. They checked and they were like, okay, you're not following the rules, and they literally shut them down. And we're like, okay, this is not working.
So wow,
we'll see how that goes.
Are bars and pubs open?
Yeah, everything, like restaurants, bars, pubs.
Not here.
The only thing that's still closed out is hotels. Till the end.
I was going to say, because pubs and bars, that's where you catch colds.
Mm.
I mean, I can't say I've ever caught a cold from a pizza, but you do, because they don't wash the glasses properly, do they?
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, that's, as I said, like, it was a little bit shocking. I didn't expect that. I was thinking it would be more, like, limited, like a couple of people here and there who want to go, but nope, everybody.
Oh, okay.
So everybody and their grandmother was outside. So we'll see. Like, it really tells you what people are thinking. They're thinking, okay, this is over, and like, we can just go back to normal.
Yeah. That's exactly wishful what a lot thinking. Of people are thinking.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, this week in tech, who has the first story for us?
Who's
first? In the chat room, as always.
Ooh.
Oh, Jeff.
The fact that I got my story in first.
Jeff's got the same one as me.
Oh, well, then you can have that one.
Have it. I've got another one.
That's all right. I'm dropping my other one in right now.
No, go, Jeff. You got it.
Okay, come on, Jeff. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, so my other story, which should have been my first pick anyhow.
Oh, no, that was my story. Oh, no.
Hold on, let me go find another story.
No, it wasn't my story.
All right, so my alternate first story, Sphero has spun off a company from themselves, but it, you know, so it's like a subsidiary company. And instead of being a robotics company for toys and educational programs, this is a company that's going to be making robots for first responders and other people that are in dangerous situations. So they don't specifically say police, but that's, I mean, if you're a first responder and you have dangerous situations, it sounds like police and potentially military to me.
Mm-hmm.
So the company is called Company 6. And in addition to the robotics aspect, they're working on artificial intelligence technologies to go along with all of this. There we go. So now Sphero isn't just your favorite toy robot maker. They're going to be your apocalypse robot maker.
Well, or you could say they're now building real life BB-8s, right?
That's true. Yes. Which is kind of funny because they actually built a lot of the technology for BB-8 for Disney.
I didn't know that.
Really?
In the movies. Yeah, they were actively involved in the development of BB-8.
I did not know that. That's interesting. I thought they only had like the toy contract and were building the toys after the fact, but didn't know they were actually involved in like making BB-8 for the movies.
Yeah, it's there. Now, some of the BB-8 shots that you get in the movie, those are actually a puppet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense.
But yeah, but they were involved in developing the technology so that BB-8 would actually roll around and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make the Star Wars themed robot toys anymore because they just didn't sell very well. So the Sphero BB-8 that sits on the corner of my desk apparently is now a collector's item.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, it was like a hot ticket item for like right after the movie came out. But mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many toy makers already out there, so it like probably didn't really go well. It's just hard to compete with like the Mattels and all of the big companies out there.
Yes.
Yeah. So like making those real life items might be more interesting anyway.
Probably more lucrative also. And mm-hmm. I made a joke about they'll be our apocalypse robots. But I think realistically these will be robots that will do a lot to actually help preserve life, mm-hmm. as opposed to they're not going to be like the killer robots that they had in RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine them doing something like that. But I mean, they have some amazing technology that they've developed. So
mm-hmm.
so extrapolating out from that, I could see some really fascinating robotic technology coming out
mm-hmm.
From this new company.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the military space is probably taken already. Like, there are big companies with big military contracts. But the, like, as you said, like the first responders and like the more, yeah, I mean, police, all of that, I think they might be interested in something like that. Police and like first responders, like anybody. Yeah. Like in disaster recovery, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that these first responder type robots that they're developing helps them refine the technology so that the next step will be like personal robots mm-hmm. that actually perform a function that's helpful, as opposed to like what we have right now with the various personal robots that have come and gone mm-hmm. where they're more like novelties. But I'm thinking something that provides actual useful functions in your household.
I'd love one to do all my ironing.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Just general housework. Like, I would be fine with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just...
Yeah, but a little personal assistant that can follow you around.
Sorry, I'm completely fixated on that last paragraph of the story, those three magic words, future robot armies. Hmm. I've just spent the past 5 minutes fantasizing, and I just realized I'm in the middle of a podcast.
Well, you've been seeing Terminator then.
Oh, fantastic. Robot armies. That's a search. That is a Google search. Robot armies. Find me anything about robot armies.
I think there's plenty on Google to keep you busy with that.
Yeah. Mm.
I like Ewan's comment in the chat room. Sphero makes killer robots.
Could be a show title.
Would you be able to just kick them away, just like the Star Wars one? I mean, if ever a robot was saying, come kick me, it's that bloody BB-8, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, but who would know unless you speak droid?
Give it a boot. Yeah. Top of the net, back of the net.
Yep, that's true. All right. Alistair, you have something
my
about...
story.
Yeah, your story was next. Yes. EasyJet.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me just call back up so it's in front of me so I can describe. Well, the surely the story of the week, the tech story of the week, has to be EasyJet, the airline that has revealed that it allowed 9 million customers' data to be accessed illegally.
Holy crap.
Wow. And it's not just like not just their bookings, but like everything, right? Initially,
I mean, you know, well, unless we find out lots of horrible things later, the link that I can't remember, is that the link I've just put in? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. The story keeps getting updated, but one of the stories on the Register, I think, was the most recent one today. The more you hear about it, the more you discover, because at first EasyJet come out and it's as if they're saying the usual, okay, hands up. Sorry, we've reported ourselves to the data commissioner, which is the best thing to do, because then the fine will be smaller if you show contrition. And what they said was anyone whose credit card details were accessed, we've contacted already. So that meant a whole load of us were sighing with relief. Anyway, I got the email this morning just to say, don't worry, they haven't looked at your credit card, but they have accessed this. They basically gave you a list. So it was my name, my email address, and they had this very, very specific date range of someone has, you know, part of the thing is, you know, someone's actually looked at where I've been flying between a particular date, you know, in late last year and a specific date in March this year. So they actually knew specific dates and they knew which data someone had looked at and which data they hadn't looked at. Mm. I wasn't aware that hacks normally work that way. I thought someone just made a great big dump of the of what they found, and then they go, oh, blimey, it was someone's run off with it. But this sounds like something else. Now, I'm still trying to get my head around what type of hack they're talking about. As usual, they announced it, as they always do, as it's not just a hack, it's a sophisticated hack. It has to be that, because if they said, you know, someone noticed it, you know,
someone typed 1111
and it wasn't hashed or anything. It was just, oh, look, there it is. It's sitting there for half an hour. And that's what happens with lots of people. But, you know, it's probably not what it is. It's completely sophisticated. But exactly how and what, and I mean, of course, they haven't got my credit card details because I didn't actually save them on there. But they said, don't worry, no one's looked at your passport number, which is something I have saved up there. And they go, how do they know which bits and where? And
they probably have some sort of
sounding hack.
Yeah, they probably have some sort of monitoring system that they can tell them, like, who accessed what.
What fields, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the hacks like that, the companies will say they access names and addresses or phone numbers and social security numbers, or they'll be very specific about what it is that the attackers were able to get.
Mm. Yeah, I mean,
but is it because they couldn't get hold of the passport numbers? I mean, looking for my name and email address isn't very useful. Not really, not to that many people, but my name, email address and a passport number, that is useful.
Yeah.
I can't quite, are they kept on completely separate systems? Do they have a more secure system for the passport numbers, but less so for logins?
If it's designed well, it would be, yeah. I mean, there's certain information that's more like basic information, like your name, your email address, birthday maybe. And then there's certain information that is like more critical, like passport numbers, credit cards. And if you're like designing your system well, you're keeping those data as separate as you can.
Yeah, no, it's just funny. Yeah. Someone's gone in and thought, oh, let's find out about this customer. I'm not interested in his passport number or credit card, but I really want to know where he was flying on the 17th of October 2019. Oh, look where he went. Cheapskate.
Yeah. And sometimes it's also like different data of different systems, like even the same type of data, like, you know, the first, let's say, 10 million customers on one server and the next 10 million on another server. And if you do that, then if one server is compromised, well, it only affects like part of your customer base. That's usually what happens. That's why it's usually not everybody. Either it was detected in time and they could block it before like too much data could be accessed, or like it was simply separated and someone just got part of that.
Yeah. Oh, I also like in the email they sent me and some of my colleagues as well, because most of the email is telling me how I should take care about my data. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for the lecture.
That's pretty...
But yeah. What are you doing to take care of my data?
Yeah.
I mean, good advice, but, you know, follow it, eh? Darndest thing.
Yeah, it's unfortunately it happens every now and then. Like, it's hard to prevent it. I mean, as someone who works in that industry, well, healthcare, which is even worse in some respect, it is pretty difficult to protect against that type of attack. Like, if someone really wants in and someone has the means to get in or has like the financial backing, sometimes it's state governments, sometimes it's just like bigger hacker groups that have enough money, they will find a way. Like, nothing is perfect. Like, there's always a way. Like, I mean, oftentimes it's social engineering. It's like phishing attacks against the company to get credentials to then get into the network and then go from there.
Do you think the attacks are getting more sophisticated, or it's just a case of we're catching them more now? People reporting or investigating and whistleblowing and all of that a bit more than they used to?
I think it's both. It's definitely the means of detecting and also companies being aware of the issues and also governments being behind it. I mean, let's be clear here. A lot of times it's not the companies that want to disclose that to their customers. It's that they have to, legally have to do it. So nowadays, I think in most countries, any data breach has to be reported to the government and also has to be like reported to the affected customers, like what happened and so on. And if you don't do that, especially in the European Union, I know that also in the US, they're pretty hefty fines that you have to pay for. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and like for a good reason, like you should. I think, but it's also getting more sophisticated, like especially the state-run attacks are pretty sophisticated sometimes. We've had to deal with that a little bit as well, like as you can imagine, medical field.
Yeah,
there is very interesting data to be had, and we have to make sure that doesn't leak. Yeah, there are some.
You know, part of the funny problem is when they say watch out for phishing attacks from now on, because these people have got your details, and there are lots of ways of trying to identify phishing attack, but one of the easy ways that I always tell people is, if it hasn't got your name anywhere in the email, it's probably not real. And guess what? The email I got from EasyJet does not have my name in it anywhere.
Yeah.
That well is, done, EasyJet. Yeah.
I think that is a big problem with like all these disclosures and so on. Like, you get emails and you don't know whether they're real, because they're how do you know whether it's a phishing email from like someone pretending to be EasyJet or it's actually EasyJet?
I did think that twice. First, I did a little look at the email header and hope for the best, but it was also telling that the entire email has no clickable link in it.
Yeah,
and I thought, well, that seems a fair bet that it's not a phishing attack. If there's no attachment, there's no pictures, and there's no clickable links, it doesn't ask you to go anywhere. It's just a load of information.
it's
probably real.
It's like, it is, as I said, it is very difficult. Some countries are actually mandating separation of like critical data from your base, like base level data. In the US, I know it's with credit card data that has to be separated. In Italy, for example, you have to, like, your demographic data, so your name, birth date, address, and so on, has to be separate from the medical data. Fully physically separated.
Okay.
So,
it can be anonymized, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there has, like, you can't even have, like, the same identifier in both. Like, there has to be, like, a third mapping for that. Things like that. So I think everybody is getting smarter. simply.
Yeah, that might explain the cards thing, because EasyJet have been able to say only a small number of credit card details were stolen. And of course, because they've lost, well, not lost, but illegally allowed someone to illegally access 9 million customers' data, it's very easy to say, well, only a small number. Well, a small number compared with
credit card.
Compared with 9 million. So we are talking about over 2,000. So it is a small number. But it would make sense that if you had access to 9 million customers, and they only made off with whatever 2,200 credit card details, it must have been kept separate. I can't see any reason for it. So maybe the
I don't know. Yeah. I would hope so. I mean, nobody should store credit card data if they don't have to.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, was how many of those 9 million stored their credit card data in the thing, because I know I don't store it in mine, so I wonder how many.
Well, I mean,
if you're going to talk about travel, I mean, it's one thing buying air tickets. Most people don't buy them off the cuff. They have a sit down and a think, and they usually sit at a computer and do it.
Yeah. But
for things that are bought on a phone, you do tend to upload your credit card details, because you cannot be asked to be sitting there with your credit card on one hand and your phone, and you're copying it across. You go, oh yeah, I'll upload it. So, you know, I've uploaded it for the train company. I've uploaded it for the bus company. I'll just get the new, you know, so EasyJet probably okay with that, but other places I have uploaded my credit card. Hey, I've uploaded it to PayPal. God knows.
Yep. Yeah, but I mean, even if you didn't store it for like future use, they have to keep it around for the actual transaction.
Yeah, that's true.
So it has to be there. Like, I mean, there are rules like what they can store and whatnot, but like, yeah, they have to have that around for like a while.
Oh, and the big shock for me was, as soon as I heard the story on the radio, on wherever it was, I can't remember, earlier this week, I thought, right, you know, I'll go and change my email. I'll change my password. So I went online, changed my password, and there was a real shock to discover what my old password was. I mean, it was the crappiest password I think I've ever thought of. I mean, it was better than typing, you know, password with a zero instead of the O. It was slightly better than that, but not much. And at least I was thinking, well, I haven't used that anywhere else, because I would have been too embarrassed to. But I'm glad it did change that quickly. How awful that was.
Yeah. So
yeah, I did a self audit on passwords a while ago, and you know, which was relatively easy to do, because I could just have one password list all of my weak passwords. And when I looked at some of them, I was appalled. Yeah. So I feel your pain.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah, I do that every now and then too. It's very helpful. So, Hawa, you have a story about a grandmother and her Facebook account.
Yeah, lovely Jeff. Didn't post that story, so I'm going to talk about the grandmother. So this grandmother, it has basically been ordered to delete all the photos of her grandchildren that she's got on Facebook and Pinterest. So my understanding is the mother kept telling her mother to take them off and her mother wouldn't, and basically took her to court about it. And under GDPR, you can now ask people shouldn't post, which I found was quite interesting, because I was just thinking about all the grandmothers, the aunts, the uncles, godmothers, godfathers that post pictures of everyone's kids. I mean, most of my friends that have kids tend to tell me don't post, or, you know, I don't want you to post that on Facebook or anything. But it was like, is this where we're going to now? And no one's going to be able to post anything anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
without consent.
Yeah, I don't think
it's a good thing, but
yeah, yeah, no, you're right. I mean,
this is one of the stories I considered. Yeah. So basically, we should just coordinate every week and decide which one of us is
which was the yeah.
Just divvy up the story, like just collect a couple and just divvy it up. So who's gonna take one? Even if it wasn't GDPR, I mean, I think it would still be protected under like whatever the right to your own image rule is called.
The right to your own, is it the right to your own?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah. So if someone
takes a photograph of you, you actually have shared copyright. The photographer has the copyright on the photo, but you actually, there's an assumption or an unspoken agreement that you didn't mind having a photo taken. Yeah. So the people in the photograph do have rights.
They do.
And they always did.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the EU actually, like the people in the photo, except if it's, I think, was that like of public? Now it would be good to have you in here.
Yes,
he probably knows this, but I think it's if you're, I mean, in a public place or the photo is of public interest, so like you're a celebrity of some sorts, and it's in public, and again, even then, it has to be in public, not your own home. Then,
it's more the case. You can still take a crowd scene, but you have to kind of make it fairly.
Yeah, it has to be
unclear who anyone is.
Yeah, it has to be about the crowd or the place and not about the individual.
I first came across this in my first job. I'd cropped up a picture. This was back in the days before you could do it all on computer. I'd cropped up a picture with a tracing paper overlay, sent it off down to the repro house, and I didn't see it again until it went into print, and they got the wrong crop. So instead of focusing on the guy who was sitting down, they'd done a high crop. So you saw his neck, head, and behind him there was some dumb-looking bloke with a cup of tea going. And I thought, looks stupid. And sure enough, that week I had a phone call from the guy who was holding the cup of tea. He said, "I've just seen a photograph of me in your magazine. I look stupid." Okay, no, you don't. Lovely,
so debonair.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, he was right. I mean, you can't really do that.
Mm-hmm.
He probably didn't know he was in that picture, and we never thought to ask him because we had no intention of reproducing him. It was the guy who was sitting further down the shot. And you can't just stick people's photographs in willy nilly that way.
I was going to say with the
kids thing, I saw more of this towards the final years of when my children were at school. Because normally when you have, school plays and so on, and musical recitals, you know, all the parents would normally turn up with all their video cameras and everything.
Yeah.
In the final couple of years, it was kind of like, right, everyone. You know, if you take a photograph here, there are other kids on stage, we're going to have to take, if you want to take photographs, they've said it's okay, but we're going to have to take note of all your names if you take photographs. And it just, I felt sorry for the teachers, but I'm also thinking this was the right thing to do. It makes people think twice.
Yeah.
What got me about this story as I was reading through is it was in the Netherlands, and I don't know if Dutch law is any different. For privacy law, because privacy law does differ compared with GDPR or something else.
Yeah.
So if they have stricter or looser privacy law, and also whether it sounds like a bit of a family estrangement between the mother and the daughter.
Yeah, yes. It did.
Absolutely.
Because what came to my mind was I can just imagine, you know, much elderlier grannies that, you know, just normally you would have your photos and you're sharing them out with your friends, even back in the day when they used to just carry a normal picture just be showing, which is probably what she thought she was doing, and then being told, take it down, I'm not going to.
Yeah, and I mean, also in most cases, like if the mom said, "Hey, can you take it down?" usually the grandmother would say, "Well, okay."
Yeah.
Like, it's usually, like, if you have a good relationship, that wouldn't be, like, nobody asks you to do that for, like, no reason. Like, usually there's a reason for it, and then, like, most people are reasonable. So, yeah, there's definitely something with that going on. The interesting
there's some dysfunction going on in this family.
The interesting thing about, like, in this article was that the GDPR usually wouldn't have applied because it was purely personal or household processing of data, how like the court ruled it, but because it's on Facebook and on Pinterest, and that's like making it available to a wider audience, they said it would apply. So that's, I think that is more the interesting piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I mean, ultimately she will have to pay a fine of 50 euros or 45 pounds
a
day if she ever posts anything again of like the grandchildren.
Again, but I think also the ones that she's got on there, if she doesn't take them down,
yeah,
I think she still has the 50 every day. So
this sets the precedent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my guess is that we will see more families that really don't want to have their children's photographs online using GDPR to get the non-complying family member to comply.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I can tell you one thing. In Germany, this is going to be huge because people there are crazy when it comes to privacy. So, I mean, I remember when Google Street View came out and basically half of Germany like forced Google to block out their houses. They didn't want
their houses. Oh, we had the opposite in Britain, didn't we? Wow. We had people dancing in the street wearing silly hats and stuff. Didn't we? People say, go to this, click on this link. It's me dressed up as a furry.
Nope. You know?
But then they did blur out the people, didn't they?
Look at. They were supposed to.
Not the buildings, but
No, even like the buildings, they try to, like even entire like cities try, or like little small villages try to block Google from even coming there. Like the whole nine yards. They were, like there was Germany. It's very German. So I mean, for a country that likes, like, and so to some extent at least, to be like very loose with like not wearing clothes and stuff, like at beaches, Germany is a very privacy centric country.
Well, of course, privacy actually is important.
Before you get down to Street View, you have the satellite view, don't you? So what do they do? Block the satellite?
Oh,
I used to admire what my back garden used to look like years ago.
Yeah, they tried that too.
What a mess I've made of it. All right, okay.
Yeah, they tried that too, but somehow that didn't work. I think it was there was some law in place that prevented that. But yeah, street level, like they, like people were actually successful, and Google had to take, like, had to blur out those houses. So
I think there was someone who'd, who'd actually he'd heard, or someone had told him that you know the Street View car was in town, and he'd kind of he made sure he was on the corner of a pavement as it drove past, and he sprinted down the street so he could be on the next corner as well. He wanted to be on there twice, kind of standing there going, he managed it.
Yeah, that's funny.
I think that was true, or I might have just made that up.
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure that's true. people have done the funniest things.
They used to do that in the old days, apparently, with school photographs. So when they get the whole school together and they have one of those panoramic type cameras, used to be a thing. You'd always have some wag who'd try and get all the way on the left, and then he'd sprint round and be there all on the right, and no one would notice until it was too late. And of course, no one had invented Photoshop then, so they couldn't fix it.
Yeah, sounds about.
Had I realized that was an option, I'm that guy, I would have done it.
No, I wouldn't have been brave enough, man.
That's true. So my story today is something very important that turned 30 today.
I know exactly what your story is. And it's funny, Patrice, because I considered that as one of my stories too.
Good. Like, we have the same stories today.
Solitaire.
Exactly. It's solitaire. It's probably, I would guess, like, I don't know, but I would guess that it is probably the most played game in the world.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, given how long it has been around, it basically, I mean, everybody I know has played it.
I bet it is the most played video game ever.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I didn't know it was this old. I mean, yeah, it came out on like Windows something, like
was
early
Windows 3.
Yeah, it says the story says Windows 3 actually, but like I just remember like
when it came out.
Yeah, I remembered like it was definitely in 3.11. That's what we had first, and my mom used to play it.
Yeah, see, my mom used to play it as well, and I'm, but that's the only thing she used the computer for.
Mm-hmm.
like, sit down, switch the computer on, you know, wait three quarters of an hour to boot up. Mm-hmm. And then she, and I go, well, look, you've got a pack of cards right next to you. Use that.
Yep. Yeah.
No, it's not the same.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Like, I remember as a kid, like, first playing with, like, my grandma's boyfriend, because he did the same thing. He basically used to, I mean, every now and then he would, like, have, like, a whatever WordPerfect document and was writing something. But usually all he did was play Solitaire. And I remember actually picking up a pack of cards and simulating Solitaire. Like, I didn't have access to a computer, and I was like, I want to play Solitaire too. And so I basically simulated the game for myself. Mm. So that was
awesome.
Also funny. Yeah.
It reminds me, I'm trying to remember, there was a time when programmers, you know how programmers used to put lots of fun Easter eggs mm-hmm. into software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now they don't really bother anymore because they'll just get in trouble.
Yeah.
But there used to be a lot of this in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I seem to remember there was this fad for putting hidden games inside programs. I'm trying to think of some examples. If you got to a certain place, suddenly you'd have Solitaire, or you'd have, what was the one with the black and white
discs?
Gothello.
Had one.
Hmm?
Quark Express, what was the game that there was a plug-in, what they called an extension, you could have the game in there.
There was the in the about window you could get Alien to fly through.
It wasn't in the about window. You held down a certain number of keys, K, to delete something. And if you kept doing it over and over again, the big alien would come in with a bazooka and kill the little alien.
I'm sure you could install
someone had done an extension which had something like Othello or something like that. So if you got bored, you just call this thing up.
I just
don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, it's not true. There was Excel that had the flight simulator built in at some point.
I do remember now. Yes, yeah. You're right. There was something about that.
There were more. There were quite a few. There are, like, even today, there are some apps that still have it that retain that. For example, PCCalc.
Yeah. The throw the bananas and stuff in AR and the dice stuff.
Yeah, so some still have that.
Yeah, Tweetbot, it's not a game, but it's an Easter egg. If you bring up the about window in Tweetbot on the Mac and click on the eyes, they turn to laser eyes.
Yeah, I mean, kind of Carrot Weather has something like that if you poke the AI.
Carrot Weather is just like a giant Easter egg.
It's true, yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but, like, it's definitely gotten, like, less and less, I think, as software has gotten bigger, more complex, and more serious to some extent. But, yeah, it definitely used to be a thing, more of a thing.
It used to be a running joke, actually, when I was working at MacUser, is every time Quark would come up with a new, sorry, Quark, so it's pronounced Quark, every time Quark would come up with a new version of Quark Express, they'd say, oh, yes, we've reprogrammed this from the ground up. And you go, have you? Three keys, but oh, look, there's the alien again. you know, there's no way you've reprogrammed that alien. It's the same alien. I think it's still there.
Oh, probably is, yeah.
I'm going to have a look. It was definitely the best Easter egg ever, that one, because it had the sounds as well. So
that's right, it did.
The little feet went plop, 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 and kaboom. People wondering what you're doing. That's right, and there's no way of stopping it except pulling the plug.
Yeah.
Pulling the plug on your SC30.
Trying to remember what else we had.
Thing is, do they still call Solitaire? They don't give it some other funny name now, like Klondike.
I think they still do, but they've got different versions of it now, don't they?
Yeah, it's still called Microsoft Solitaire. And it is actually available on iPhones and Android devices, and it's available for browsers as well.
Seriously, Microsoft Solitaire. I can put it on my iPhone and iPad.
Yeah, yeah. Microsoft.
It's probably got loads and loads of ads, isn't it?
That.
Oh, probably, yeah. Like, Microsoft says that it actually play, like, 35 million people play it each month. 100 million hands each day.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah, me too.
Because sometimes I just play it.
I have no idea which version am I playing. Soft, I am playing. Yes, I play it. Yeah. Mm. Not just every day, but at least about once an hour. Mm.
Wow, Microsoft Solitaire Collection. Mm. It has multiple Solitaire games or multiple versions of Solitaire.
That's it. It's multiple versions. I only know how to play one of them. The others, I haven't the faintest idea, and there are no instructions.
And it's free, but it has in-app purchases.
The in-app purchases are to buy, you know, interesting looking backs of the cards.
Yeah.
Which they're not very good. And also to switch off the ads. The ads, I think, are quite funny.
Yeah,
it's always for home insulation and stuff like that. I find it quite funny.
Well, I had no idea that I could get Microsoft's Solitaire on my iPhone.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's, I mean, I didn't know that either. It was like, it's kind of a random thing, like that after 30 years, it even survived like platform switches and everything.
I mean, to be fair, it existed before Microsoft.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So it's one of those games that will probably, I don't think it'll ever go away.
No, I don't think so.
People probably pass it on to their kids and stuff. So,
I mean, it has even like gone into pop culture. Like if you watch movies, there's this trope of like someone like, I don't know, working at a front desk at the hotel or like a call center or whatever. And whenever they don't want to, they tell you, I'm going to take care of that, blah, blah. Or like they check something and then they show the computer screen and it's like they're playing solitaire or something. Solitaire. It's always solitaire. Mm-hmm. They're like, there's no room available. And they never did.
Let me check that. Click, click, click. Yeah. They're just clicking the cards.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's really interesting. Microsoft is also asking players to complete a few hands today. They want to set the record for most games of Microsoft Solitaire played in a day.
That's no problem.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of crazy that for something that started as a tool to help people work on their mousing skills, because back then using a mouse was a novel idea. Now it's this this worldwide obsession.
Yeah. Wasn't that kind of the idea behind Minesweeper as well, I think?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And Apple, they went a completely different direction, and they had the thing where flies would buzz around on your screen. You had to click them, and then they'd smash and go splat.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
That's kind of like an Easter egg as well, right? Wasn't there a Clippy thing as well? If it did something to Clippy, it would do something. I just remember it.
I just shudder to think what it is that Clippy did.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But I think there was something where, like, if you
smash its face in. Maybe. Clippy, it looks like you're trying to type a letter and tie your socks.
Yeah, bend it out of shape or something. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, as I said, like I'm surprised it has survived this long. Like honestly, I mean, to be fair, like it was probably one of the first games on a computer. Like after, I mean, obviously, Pong, kind of, and Snake, I think, was one that I remember playing really early.
Oh, I forgot about Snake.
Yeah, that was
Think about Pong, though. It wasn't really a game. It was the console, wasn't it? Yes, it was one and the same. You'd buy the machine, and it played Pong.
The
it
original, Pong. Yes.
It didn't do anything else.
The original, yes, but it definitely came, like, I remember very, very early on, like, MS-DOS times. It was one of the first games available. Like, or it actually came with, like, that came with the machine.
I remember when I used to always get a new, like, PC, laptop or computer, the first thing I would always check was, is there solitaire?
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, I'd load it up and just play solitaire. It's like, yeah, okay, fine, it's there, it's fine.
Yeah.
What was the other game? I want to say it was Gorilla, but it might be Banana.
Yes.
Where you had to type in the angle and velocity, and then the gorilla would throw the banana and it'd go over the buildings, and you're trying to hit the other gorilla.
It was definitely, it was called Gorilla. That was, I was thinking about that, but I wasn't sure it was a, like a German thing, because that was on the very first computer my dad bought. And my sister and I used to play it, and like she was just like, I don't know, 2 or 3. She could barely speak, but we played Gorilla. So that was, that was really funny. I thought about that. Yeah. It's actually a game that I would love to find again. Like, I think I have to Google that at some point. Because, like, that, as I said, that's honestly probably the first memory I have of a computer game at all. Like, early 90s time frame, like MS-DOS time still.
It looks like there are versions of it on the Google Play Store and Apple's App Store.
Oh, nice. Oh, cool. I will have to buy that.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the one on iOS, and the graphics look pretty accurate.
Yeah. That was one of the built-in games that came with MS-DOS, I think.
Yes.
I don't know which version we had. I mean, that was like, I was just too little to remember that. But probably like 4 or something.
So the difference now is that you can you don't have to type the numbers.
Oh. Kind of boring.
Because it's on screen. Yeah.
I mean, the funny thing was, I mean, at that age, we probably didn't know what we were doing. We were just entering random numbers and just figuring out as we went, like...
Of course.
Yeah, I remember that. And you would destroy, like, the skyscrapers and stuff like that. They would collapse at some point.
Yep.
Yeah, I have to find
There's a link to the iOS game in the chat room now.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and just having a look at it.
Yeah, if you want to find the links that we're talking about, head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and then navigate to the 22nd of, what month is it? May. Blanking on it. I was like, oh, where are we? 22nd of May and around 9 p.m. UK time. You will find the link. Yeah, that looks pretty spot on. That looks exactly like that. I will have to get that. That's crazy. Takes me back to the late. It must have been, early 90s for me. Like my sister was born in 1990, so yeah, probably like 92 or something.
The graphics take me back.
Yeah,
just I think the look and feel reminds me of the game.
The graphics actually look slightly better in the screenshots than I think the original, like how I, like simply because the screen wasn't as good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also available for the iPad. That's awesome. I'll play that on the iPad. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I kind of wonder what the story is behind that game. Like how...
Oh. I can't install that on my iPad.
Oh.
He needs to update it for 64-bit.
Apparently. Oh, no. Okay, yeah. It looks pretty old, like copyright 2009.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Well, that's before the iPad was invented. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it did have an iPad version. Yeah, so it must have been updated at some point, but yeah, it requires iOS 6 or later. So probably hasn't been updated in a while. Too bad.
Yeah, 6 or 7.
Yeah, too bad. Probably not going to work on any modern device anymore.
Well, that seems kind of appropriate.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, that's too bad. That's really sad. Like, okay. I was thinking about that game.
Might be able to find an online version of it somewhere.
Oh, probably.
Oh, yeah. It looks like... there are online versions as well, like Classic Reload.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you have to install an IO6 emulator. That's the way to do it.
That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. I just put a link to what? Excuse me.
QBasic. Yes, that was the language. That was the language behind it. I remember that.
Wow. Yeah, it looks like a full DOS emulator running in a browser window.
Wow. Platform DOS. Game year 1990. Interesting. Yeah. Blast from the past. Alistair, you have another story for us.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't a proper story. It was one of those stories when you kind of go, oh, yeah, look at that. And then you're done. Where's my link? I've just pasted it in and I've lost it. The story is essentially all in the headline. Singapore sentences man to death via Zoom call. So, you know when you will slag off your bosses for sacking you by text message, making you redundant by SMS? Well, this is slightly worse. Hang on, let's all get for a Zoom call. Hey, look at my books. Aren't we having a great time? You're dead. You know, you're all sitting around with your lovely books and the cat jumps in and the kids are crying and then someone in one corner of your screen puts on a black hat and goes all somber and you think, oh, this Zoom call's taking a turn for a worse. But yeah, so in Singapore, whoever, was it a drug dealer? I didn't even read the story. I just loved the headline. It was good enough for me.
It was a good headline.
Since they couldn't meet together in court, they've used Zoom. See, you can use it for anything.
Drug trafficking.
Sentencing people to death. Yep. Brilliant.
Drug trafficking.
That was it. I don't expect any discussion on that. I thought it was great heading.
Yeah, I mean, it shows you, like, I mean, Singapore is a pretty, like, forward-thinking country. I mean, well, other than the political system to some extent, but, like, I mean, I've worked on, like, stuff for Singapore, and they're, like, pretty good with, like, medical healthcare and, like, technology and so on, so kind of doesn't surprise me that they would do something like this. I mean, in 20.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, that's where their specialism lies, especially in service industries. I mean, hey, well, no, I mean, they haven't got many farms out there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's true.
It's a service industry nation.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy that apparently, if I'm reading this correctly, he got the death sentence for drug trafficking because he had at least 28.5 grams of heroin. Or he was complicit in trafficking at least 28.5 grams of heroin.
Okay, so I know nothing about this. 28 grams isn't very much.
I have no clue.
It doesn't weigh very much. But I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
But where was heroin. What country was it in there again? Was it in
Singapore?
Singapore. Yeah. So that probably.
Yeah.
Probably explains why.
That's the whole.
It's funny, you see, if someone tried to do that to me on a Zoom call, I'd say, I'm sorry, you're still on mute. You're still
not here. Right.
Hold your space bar down.
Try again. You could play Zoom call bingo with that.
No, sorry.
No. You're breaking up.
Yes, you're
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's it, like... It's interesting that they're doing this. I'm a little bit surprised about like how harsh that sentence is, but well, it's Singapore. They have a lot of zero tolerance.
Is he a repeat offender?
I don't know. I mean, even if like they have zero tolerance policies for almost anything. So.
Oh yeah. Oh, there's that.
Yeah, like. Even littering is basically a capital offense there. All right.
Yeah, over here it's compulsory.
Yeah, go to Italy. Like southern Italy is kind of, well, big chunks of Italy that I've seen at least are, like littering is just like sports there. Like they just do it every day.
Yeah. Well, over here, like anywhere else, there's... there's a bit of a problem with a fly tipping. I know it's become a more of a big thing now, but with the lock-in, most of the disposal centres have been shut down. And I think they open them on rare occasions, and it's just to let people get rid of the vegetation stuff. So people have been cutting down trees and so on, because you have to put that somewhere. Yep. But people have started dumping, you know, actually quite small and relatively insignificant amounts of home stuff in places. So you think about fly tipping, you think, ah, someone's chucked a fridge and a bed and something. What's actually happening? Fly tipping is when people want to throw away stuff that wouldn't go in your bin because it's too big, but they don't want to pay
like
the local council.
Furniture and mattresses stuff, and they come and dump them in the my alley near the dumpster.
Exactly. But what's happening is, you know, but if you've got loads of cardboard, for example, you take it down to the local recycling center because it won't go in your bin. But what's happening now is, since you can't do that, or you won't be able to do for a while yet, people have been kind of going, oh, I'm going to get rid of all this stuff. So you know, you walk past the bins and someone has stacked up a whole load of pots and pans. And you go, what? You know, couldn't you have just held on to your pots and pans, your old crockery, for another few weeks? Oh, no, I've got to. So they're fly tipping like really small objects and then just stacking them up. It's like someone's like cleared out their grandma's apartment or something. It's a, you know, it's not a bed. It's you know, a load of plates that they don't like anymore. Odd.
Living in a college town, every semester, there's the students that are leaving and not coming back. And it's amazing how many of them just take all of the stuff that they bought for their apartment or dorm room or whatever, and then come find the dumpsters that are in the various alleys around Boulder and dump all their stuff. And they'll just like pile up really nice stuff next to the dumpsters. So if you're in the market to furnish your home around Boulder, just once a semester, you can pretty much get really good stuff for free. You just need to know where the dumpsters are near the college.
Didn't they used to say this about Japan? Was, you know, if you wanted a new hi-fi, go to the dump. And you'll find loads of people who've thrown away their old hi-fi, and it's perfectly good because they've got the new model. Yeah. May not be true anymore, but I remember people telling me that.
Well, never heard about that.
Yeah. Well, that might not be true then.
This podcast and all the other podcasts on the network are supported by TSO Host. They're a really great service. They provide all the servers for BTN. We have two really great servers. Never had an issue with them, like in, I don't know, 2 years at least, probably more. I don't even remember when we set up those servers. They've been rock solid, not an issue at all. Like, we didn't even need their really great stellar, like really great service. I've watched that a little bit on Twitter, with like BTN listeners interacting with, they needed some support or they had some questions, and the support has been really like really responsive and really helpful. Like, I mean, even like for me, who like knows usually how to do things, I could tell that like the people at the support line there, they were really knowledgeable and could like actually help. And weren't just like sending out standard responses and standard links. They were actually like helping people and really making sure that they get what they need. So if you're in the market for like a domain name or like web hosting packages, email, dev pre-built packages or pre-built setups for WordPress, for example, if you need a blog, some other systems as well. Or as I said, like if you need some like good server hosting, whether it's like a really small server or something more beefy like we have, then head over to tslhost.com. And there's also a code that you can use. It's BTN2020. And with that, you get 20% off everything that you order on TSL Host. And please, 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 if you're doing that or if you are already a TSL Host, customer, or if you just want to tell them that like you think it's great that they support us, then, Nick, head over to Twitter or other social media and let them know. I mean, that is really all they are asking for to support us. Just that we give them a little bit of brand recognition and that we like let them know that we like them and that they're great. As I said, just head over to tsohost.com. And the other great company and great people is I'm and Max. If you're listening to the Max show, then you know Callum is here every week. He works at I'm and Max. They are a premier Mac repair shop, like authorized service provider and everything. They actually repair more than Max. That's something we discovered. I think they're still waiting for Greeny to send in his his broken swimming Chromebook. Yeah, it was a Chromebook. Mm-hmm. They also they offer to repair, and I'm going to send it in my Beats headphones, probably other stuff as well. They basically, like we talked about on the Mac show, basically Callum said, well, if you have something that like is electronics, has a battery that you like want to at least see whether it can be replaced, then just reach out to them and they will see what they can do. I mean, they can promise that they can repair everything, but they're at least going to check and let you know like how much it would be, even if you have to send it in like Jeff's iPad, even if you have to send it in from the United States. They will make it happen. And the cool thing is that you get a 5% discount if you mention BTN during like when you talk to them. So head over to imendmax.com for all your data recovery and repair needs. Time for the cool thing. Start us off, Alistair.
Okay. Apologies if this is old, but I only discovered it this week. It's a font called Scunthorpe Sans, and it automatically blanks out rude words.
That's funny.
So
oh, it does. Oh, wow.
So it's a free font you can download and play with, but it's clever because the one rude it won't blank out is if you do type the word Scunthorpe, it'll be fine.
Oh, that's funny.
So it's called Scunthorpe because I think famously, notoriously years ago, I'm trying to remember which system it was that would prevent you from using rude words, and it was a bit of a blanket application, and I think there was the Scunthorpe, because Scunthorpe is a northern town, okay, in Britain, in Yorkshire, and I think their local council found that their website no longer worked because their host wasn't allowing the town name to appear because it had a rude word in the middle of it. bit of fun. So a font for your children.
It's interesting what it considers bad language and what it doesn't.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, yeah. So I'm sure they'll come up with new versions. But anyway, it gave me a few minutes of amusement. So that was my cool thing of the week. Scunthorpe Sans, profanity-blocking font.
That's so funny. It's funny.
A special exemption for Scunthorpe. The town has suffered enough.
Yeah.
Try it out here. Let's see. That's pretty good. Okay. That's...
So I think there's an explanation on the homepage of how it works. It identifies certain strings of certain characters in the same, and then replaces them in the same way ligatures work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you saw two Fs or an FL or an FI, it switches to a ligature. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there is. Modern fonts can combine letters into a single ligature, usually for things like FI or FL. But you can pick anything. So we've done it for...
So governments can do this, you know, so they don't get named. They're every time someone's name appears, it gets automatically redacted.
Yeah. That sounds a little awesome. 1984, to be honest. Yeah, it's actually... That's fun. Like, so Scunthorpe Sands. All right. Howa, what have you got for us?
I've got, I think a while back I mentioned Mozilla was doing a Common Voice program, which is just collecting everybody's voices across the world. And they've now opened up a session where they're trying to get as many people as they can to help them to basically test the accuracy of their engine. So it's say a couple of words. I think it's just yes and no, and digits 0 to 9, I think it is, in English and whatever languages you can. So always want to move forward with a different format to voice recognition, but this one is to help making sure that everybody's voice is captured. So yeah.
What's the purpose of that? Like, is it for like a...
They want to open it up so that people can actually use it. So put it up on the API so that you can use it. Because at the moment, some voice recognition software cannot recognize certain dialects or things. So they're trying to capture as many as they can and make it available as an open source so people can actually use it.
It's also
like the video, of those Scots guys trying to go to floor 11. Yeah. 11. I'm sorry, I do not understand. 11. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's definitely like something like that is needed. Also, there's very little like good, voice recognition software out there that's open source. Like, I mean, yeah, you can buy like good solutions, but they're expensive.
Yeah.
And not every project can afford that, especially if you have an open source project or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Cool.
Yeah, listeners can add their voice to the project if they want.
That's pretty cool. Just head out to, the link is in the chat.
Yeah, put the link in the chat.
Yeah, it's Mozilla, communitymozilla.org, and then there's a Common Voice single word sprint. Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm going to go on that and do my David Niven impersonation.
That's funny. Jeff, what have you got for us?
I have one of the brand new Lego kits.
I'm already jealous. It doesn't matter what Lego it is. I'm just jealous.
It's okay. So I don't physically have the kit yet because they released the kit for Lego VIP members for the public, it's on June 1st. So the quantity that they had available for VIP members is already sold through. So I'll have to wait till June 1st. But it's a haunted house, like from a theme park. So a haunted house where it has like the ride that drops you super fast, and then it has hidden compartments and it's one of their kits that's addressing the adult market, because Lego totally gets that it's not like little kids playing with their bricks anymore. So they've been designing kits that cater to adult Lego fans, and this is one of them. So it's over 2 feet tall when it's finished being built. And it even has options where you can buy add-ons for motors that control the ride that drops people, and it turns lights on and off. And then there's a Lego app that you can put on your smartphone, and you can set up routines and essentially remote control the house as well.
Oh.
So it's, $250.
Mm-hmm. Not exactly cheap. And
not exactly cheap, but it has over 3,200 pieces in it. So it's less than a dime a brick. And that's the threshold. If it's a dime a brick or less, that's really good. Mm-hmm. And it has like 10 minifigures. And every time you add a minifigure, that bumps the price per brick up a little bit. So So the price per brick for this kit is actually really good, even though it's $250. And it looks like a really cool kit.
That is pretty cool.
Do you get Lego slime on the walls?
Yes, I'm sure it's an add-on.
And is there a series of Lego flies that shout, get out? I want Lego Amityville.
Yeah. The thing is...
Well, this is a great start for that.
The build is 27 inches or about 70 centimeters high. So that's pretty big.
Oh my God, I'm looking at the photographs. That woman has the worst fringe ever. Oh God. That is a mocking haircut.
I didn't even notice that. I was too busy looking at the
Oh my God, what has she done?
Well, I mean, we are all having to live at home.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I noticed it wasn't a child making the set. So,
no, this is not a set for kids. Like on the box, the age range says 18 plus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, they'd have to, wouldn't they? Otherwise, they'd get in trouble.
Yeah. I could see a teenager being interested in this.
It is very Addams Family from the outside, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I think it's a really great looking design.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't get the bit about the, what was that, a fireman? There's a picture of what looks like a fireman to me. I don't know. Like on the top floor or something. I can't work out what it is. Someone wearing a bell on his head.
That's Von Baron and his glowing portrait.
Oh.
I just found what you're looking at.
Yeah.
All right. And that's the Baron's organ there, is it? No wonder it's for 18 plus.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Oh, and there's someone with chains. Ah, that'd be good. Can you imagine Lego Hellraiser? That'd be brilliant.
I'm pretty sure if you do a Google search on Lego Hellraiser, you'll find the videos that people have made.
A dime per pin.
Okay, my cool thing is a book that I revisited. It is Becoming by Michelle Obama, actually. Listen to it again. I have the audiobook on Audible. I've had it for, I don't know when it came out, actually. Last year, 2 years ago, something like that. It is a really, really good book. What was really interesting for me, and I don't want to get into the politics, but it was very interesting for me to just listen to how she grew up and how she met her husband, and how this whole White House thing happened and how it was to live there and all of that, and I always wondered how different it is probably now. That was something that was in my in the back of my head the entire time. How I at least imagined that the current people in the White House probably how different they probably work with the people that live there and work there and have been doing that for sometimes a very long time, and how respectful, at least in the book, I mean, I don't know how real it is. It's her perspective and her telling, so you never know. It's subjective. As I said, I don't want to get into the politics of it, but how at least it looked very respectful and down to earth to a certain extent they were, and how aware they were about how much they. How much they were an issue for other people. She mentioned that she never wanted to go outside on the balcony simply because that would have basically caused the Secret Service to shut down Pennsylvania Avenue so that she could go outside and have a cup of tea there. And she never wanted to do that. She was I didn't want those people to be bothered by me, so I never did that. And things like that. And it was very, very interesting. Also her perspective on on issues of race, on issues of women in professional environments. I mean, how she had to fight for the things that she did, and the fight for the things that she wanted to achieve, and how she was basically dismissed a lot of times, and how she tried to work with like children with schools actually around the world, and especially schools in like less privileged areas, where she really wanted to show them that it's possible, and she wanted to make sure that there is a generation after her. Like she said, like she's the first, I mean, the first black family in the White House, first in a lot of respects. And she was like, but she wanted to make sure that there is a next, that it's not the only, that there's a next generation coming up that will see that it's possible and see that you can overcome the limitations that you have and do something. And so it was really interesting and really like a really good book. And like the audiobook especially is great because it is narrated by her. So it is her, I said, her very own perspective. Take it like however, with every grain of salt that you want. And like, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's probably an like alternative perspective on certain things that happened, but it's very, very much her perspective and her telling of like how she viewed things. And I mean, it was also very, very interesting that at the end she said like, I've never been interested in any public office. And I don't want to run. I never want to run as president or anything like that, because it's just not me. Because I mean, this book would have been the perfect start of her like career as maybe the next president or something. And she was like, "Yeah, that's not me. Like, I don't want to do that. I'm actually happy that we're out of there. That we don't have to deal with that anymore. That we're done, basically." She never wanted Barack to be like president. I mean, she supported him, and she was like, she did everything, and she understood that it was the thing that he wanted to do and that like was good, but she never really wanted it. Like if she had seen a different path where he was happy, she would have gone that way. At least that's the feeling I get. So as I said, it's a really good book, Becoming by Michelle Obama. So it came out, I want to say, 2 years ago. So definitely after she had moved out, it basically ends with her moving out of the White House, like last day. So good book, really good book.
Cool.
All right, then I think that's the end of this episode. How please tell people where they can find you. Oh, you muted yourself.
I mute myself.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. you can find me on Twitter as Howie A, and I'm also in the Slack room.
Awesome. And how about you, Alistair?
Oh, well, just I'm on Twitter as Ali Dabs, but I'm far too busy to put anything there.
Well, I mean, it's Twitter, so... There's that. And Jeff, where can people find you?
You can find me at textexpander.com, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Jay Gamut. And you can find me on the Text Expander webinars that I do, and on the Mac show here on the Big Show. And I kind of get around on the podcast circuit.
Yes, you do. You're basically on every podcast ever out there, I would say.
Well, it's a rough job, but someone has to do it.
Yes, absolutely. I definitely agree. Yeah, you can find me, like everything I do, you can find on thepatrice.com. And also today, I want to mention my podcast, Foodie Flashback. I know I've already scheduled the next one with Hawa. And there's also one with Chuck. So it's going to be like an interesting next couple of episodes. I'm really looking forward to that. I've already lined up the next couple of people that I want to interview. It's about food and your food-related memories and stories. Basically like a deep dive into like your life and what interesting stories and how important food really is. Like that's something we're like, I think, slowly discovering, that even people that say, "I don't care about food, I don't care about eating, and I'm not a foodie at all," somehow somewhere food is still an important piece of their life, and not just for sustenance. Like, that's something really interesting that we're seeing. So if you're interested in that, head over to foodieflashback.com. And you can find all the shows and everything on this network at britishtechnetwork.com. On Twitter, it's at @BritishTech. And yeah, please support us there. Reach out to TSO host. And also, we have the news show that comes out every day, or every weekday at least, really early in the morning. At least UK time, really early in the morning. It's super early for the US. But it's really, like, really good. And we can only do that because we have your support as listeners. And if you're not supporting us yet and you want to do that, then head over to britishtechnetwork.com. And there is a link to our PayPal where you can support us. Thanks for listening, and talk to you next time.